Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Today on Midday, the latest on the coronavirus. As the state begins shutting down its mass vaccination sites, organizations that work with vulnerable communities are finding ways to overcome the barriers to getting vaccinated. Beth Benner of the Women's Housing Coalition tells us how they've been able to help almost all of their clients get their jab. And Dr. Gigi Granvall, an immunologist with the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, on what we know and what we need to know about the origins of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. What is the evidence that the virus originated in a lab instead of passing to humans through animals? And what will it take for scientists to come to a definitive conclusion? That's coming up today on Midday after the news. Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Hope you had a great weekend. Welcome to Midday. Coming up a little later in our program today, Dr. Gigi Granvall, a scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, will join me to discuss the latest news about the coronavirus. But we begin today with Beth Benner. She's the executive director of the Women's Housing Coalition. With vaccination rates against COVID-19 slipping across the country, health officials are focusing on the barriers people are encountering when it comes to getting a jab. The Women's Housing Coalition works with some of our most vulnerable citizens, and they've had some success in getting many of them vaccinated. Beth Benner joins us on Zoom to tell us how that's been accomplished. Hey, Beth, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Tom.
So give us a little sketch. What does the Women's Housing Coalition do? What's your mission and what's your function out in the community?
So we work with people who have experienced homelessness. We work with both individuals and families. By our name, you can see that we primarily deal with women in our community because 40 years ago when we were formed, women were grossly underserved and women's needs are very different, but we do serve everyone. And what we do is we provide something that's known as permanent supportive housing. And that allows us to move people into our program. Sometimes we rent them an apartment. Sometimes we put them in buildings we own and operate. And then they have that as their home until either they get back on their feet and financially disqualify themselves or are ready to move on to their own place on their own, sometimes with a voucher. And everyone in our program has encountered some sort of disability as well as experienced homelessness.
And when it comes to the barriers that these folks face in terms of vaccination, is it a matter of access? Is it a matter of hesitancy, education about the vaccine? When you think about what the barriers are, what are they?
Well, you first have to start off with trust. A lot of our residents, you know, feel that they've been let down by society because they've lost their homes. They've lived out on the street. They've been in and out of shelters and really struggled with that. So the first thing you have to do is build trust. Then you add to the fact that as a society, a lot of our residents are Black and have, you know, a lot of distrust of the medical community. There is the challenges of education and misinformation. And what they've heard through the community or read on the internet or just heard, you know, from each other. And then you add to that confusion about what this would have to do with their own medical challenges because of, you know, whether it was drug addiction, whether it was COPD, heart issues, diabetes, et cetera, allergies. They all have a lot of fears as they're going through this. So we're trying to treat this as an individualized one-on-one set of discussions.
And what's the scale of what you're doing? How many folks are you serving at any given time at most times?
So our program has 108 slots. Right now, 101 of them are filled. And when you start counting families and the children, we're usually serving about 140 people at any point in time. Right now, we are at a 67% vaccination rate, and we have teamed up by getting an allocation from the Mayor's Office of Homeless Services and the Health Department. We've teamed up with a local provider who's using space in our building to do individualized vaccines at our building and our facility.
So how are you getting folks to your building, your facility? Are many of them already there? Is this where they're living, or do you have, satellite places, other places where the women are actually residing?
So our residents are scattered throughout the community. We do have people living in the building where we're running the clinics and where the primary care facility is that is assisting us with this. We have vaccinated almost all of our staff, 68 of our residents, 30 of the primary care primary care clinics individuals. And what we've been doing is providing lots of different ways to get incentives to go there. So if you don't live in that building, we've been Ubering you to the facility. We've made sure that our staff, people that you're familiar with, are acting as the liaison with you to get you to the nurse, to help you fill out the paperwork. We've also offered incentives. So we have accumulated a lot of donations, in-kind donations during International Month of the Woman. And so we let people shop for free by after they got their vaccination, and they were able to leave with leggings and towels and sheets and things like that that they would need and could use, shampoos, etc. And then we'll Uber you home again. We will give you a call the day before. We will, we've been providing them with lots of educational materials that we've created ourselves, even a video where they can see their case manager or me or somebody else they know talk about why getting a vaccine is important. This is really all about one-on-one outreach and individualized decision-making.
It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is Beth Benner. She is the executive director of the Women's Housing Coalition. We're talking about her organization's efforts to get folks vaccinated, working with her clientele here in Baltimore. And so, Beth, why is it that, the mass vax sites, the one that, the city was running at Baltimore City Community College, or the one that the state was running down at M&T Bank Stadium, why are those places not the best bet or the most effective venues for your clientele to be vaccinated?
Well, first of all, you have to be able to be direct and able to get yourself registered. You have to get yourself there. You have to be comfortable standing in lines with strangers. If you're in doubt about, do you really want to do this? If you're afraid of a needle, it's very easy to back out or to talk yourself out of it. So there's lots of things where we can be much more proactive and we can eliminate the barriers that can't happen at a mass vax site. Mass vax sites were great for the people who really wanted to get the vaccine. We're working with a population that is hesitant. And so you have to help them get past their fears, their barriers, and even just simple as forgetting their appointment.
And obviously scaling this up, to make it a larger program for other organizations around town is kind of antithetical to the whole idea of it. I mean, the whole point of what you're doing is keeping it small, keeping it doable within the bounds of your organization, serving, almost a couple hundred people or so. But what's your advice for other organizations in town? I mean, the state of Maryland just today issued a press release in which they were talking about a $3 million fund to work with community organizations to give COVID-19 vaccines, something along the scale of what you're doing. What have you learned in doing this that you can share as advice to other smaller organizations that are working with their particular clientele to get them vaccinated?
Well, I think the important thing is to really get to make sure that you're working with people to understand what their hesitancy is and to provide them every opportunity to get past it. I think it's wonderful that the state, the health department in the city, that all these organizations are really now starting to think about the smaller scale. You know, we are thinking it 10 at a time, you know, because the vial comes with 10 shots in it. So the more we can just think about those small chunks, we're going to get through our numbers. And our goal is to, you know, meet or exceed the 70% vaccine rate as we go through it. Our ladies live together in three of our buildings. So we really would love to get to 100% in those buildings. But I think the advice is to really meet people where they are and to really help them understand. So what is it that's holding them back from getting the shot? I had somebody tell me that they had heard they could become impotent from it. So we had to work through and educate them through that. I had somebody else who was very fearful that they would be allergic to it. And so we helped them find literature and go through that and encourage them to call their doctor and ask that specific question because we're not medical professionals. We had people that said they were scared of needles. And we actually said, you know what, so is your case manager and she is going to go with you that day and get her shot the same day or go with you and hold your hand. We also have done things like provide daycare. We had one male head of household who showed up with his two kids and I ended up playing with his children, you know, while he was waiting to get a shot and then waiting his 15 minutes. So it's all those kinds of things that are going to help people get over their concerns, their fear. Some people just want to wait till they see that other people are okay. And so being able to show them somebody they know, myself, their next door neighbor, et cetera, having gotten the shot, that all helps.
And how much longer then do you expect to continue these efforts? I mean, do you think it is possible to get to 100% vaccinations among the people involved at the Women's Housing Coalition?
I wish I could say I thought we'd get to 100%. We do have a couple people that have some mental health challenges that may not allow them to get past what getting a shot. But I think we can do better than the 67% we're at right now. And I think it's just continuing to work with people and go through all of that. So, you know, I've challenged our staff. You know, we want to get to at least 70%. We're close. But, you know, let's try to get to 85 or 90% and really, you know, do everything we can to protect. When COVID started, my goal was I knew I'd never be able to keep everybody healthy and not get COVID. But if we could keep everybody out of the hospital and alive, that was a really big goal. And with this kind of vulnerable population, we've only had three cases of COVID. And that's pretty impressive. I'm proud of my staff.
Yeah, that seems pretty good. I mean, in what ways has the pandemic over these last, you know, 15 months impacted your capacity to provide services? I mean, obviously, you are a very literally hands-on organization that's working with people in person, working with people in housing situations where distancing, you know, was very difficult well before the vaccines were even available. So, obviously, you've had to change the way you provide these services to a certain extent. What have those changes looked like? And moving forward, now that we do have vaccines as part of the landscape, will you be able to return to ways you were doing things prior to the pandemic? Or are there things about post-pandemic life that, procedures and policies that you'll continue, even though the pandemic is much more under control?
That's such a great question. I'd like to say a little bit of both. I think we've learned a lot and there's things that we're changing. We've gotten into the food business. We're partnering with an organization called Baltimore Community Foods, and we're now very much in making sure our ladies get food. We did that when they were afraid to go out and go shopping. We've also changed a lot because mental health challenges were tough on everybody. But can you imagine if you'd experienced homelessness, you had, you know, trust issues, you had mental health disorders, et cetera. So we've done a lot more one-on-ones. We've really changed our focus. We've had people who have fallen off the wagon and are starting to use substances again. And so we're working with them one-on-one and helping them get where they need to be. So the world is never going to be the same. We are looking very much forward to being able to hold, you know, group meetings and family, you know, family and house dinners and things like that that weren't able to happen before. But I think if you come out of this pandemic not having learned and changed, you miss the boat.
Yeah, that's for sure. Beth Benner is the executive director of the Women's Housing Coalition. Beth, thank you so much. And God bless for the work that you're doing. It's so, so important. These are some of the most vulnerable folks in our community. And I'm so, so glad and inspired by the work you're doing with them.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. And you know, I hope everybody gets the chance to, you know, churches, synagogues, other organizations get the chance to do the same sort of work, because I think it'll make a big difference.
Indeed it will. All right, thanks so much. Beth Benner from the Women's Housing Coalition. Coming up now, more efforts to fight COVID-19 with an immunologist from the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Dr. Gigi Granvall will join me on the other side of a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.